Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, Finn at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, which every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Thank you for loading me down and queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show. This is the story of the time the Portland Trailblazers' fate hung on an extra-long bathroom break taken in Beverly Hills, California, something like 40 years ago. Promoter Harry Glickman was late getting to the key meeting, so Baltimore Bullets basketball owner Abe Pollin stalled for time by waiting in the bathroom until he arrived. If he hadn't done that, the Trailblazers might never have been. The story was first published on November 7th of 2010. Here we go. To serious professional sports fans, Portland is a bit like a cell phone dead zone. Kids in Portland grow up with no local football team to root for, and despite efforts by the state legislature, the town's only baseball franchise is a minor league farm team for an Arizona ball club. Of course, Portland has professional soccer, the legendary Portland Timbers, but they're a relatively recent arrival to the party. What Portland does have is a major league basketball team, and a pretty good one at that. The Portland Trailblazers. But had it not been for a really long potty break taken in Beverly Hills 40 years ago, Portland might not even have that. Here's the story. Summer 1970, and a group of Portland investors has put together a proposal for a local NBA team. Perennial Northwest rival Seattle already had one, the Supersonics, established 1967. San Francisco, of course, had had one for some time. Wasn't it finally Portland's turn? The investors thought so. So when the NBA's expansion committee met that summer at the Beverly Wilshire Hotel in Beverly Hills, Portland promoter Harry Glickman flew in to make the city's case. The NBA's expansion committee consisted of Abe Pollin of the Baltimore Bullets, later renamed the Washington Wizards, Fred Zollner of the Detroit Pistons, Tommy Cousins of the Atlanta Hawks, and Carl Scheer, a representative of NBA Commissioner Walter Kennedy. Glickman had the plan for the team in hand, but he'd had to leave before the full details of the team's financing could be hashed out. When he left, the plan was to raise funds through an initial public offering of stock, and interim financing was still a big question mark. So when Glickman made the initial presentation, that's what he told the committee. Committee members were a bit dismayed, but they were impressed enough with the Portlanders' plan that they didn't shut Glickman down. Cousins immediately offered to pony up $250,000 if Glickman could find funds to match it from his Portland people. Glickman promised to find out if that could be done. From Pollin's hotel room, Glickman called home and got a discouraging reply. But just as the promoter was, quote, thinking we were dead, the phone rang again, and suddenly everything had changed. The IPO was a no-go. New Jersey real estate developer Bob Schmertz was on board, and so was Seattle businessman Herman Sarkowski. They wanted to finance the franchise privately, in partnership with Beverly Hills real estate developer Larry Weinberg, and they had $750,000 committed to the cause. Quote, I went back to the room and said, hey guys, time out, there's a new deal. Glickman recalled later in his book, I explained that we were now going to have a privately financed company. The committee members were no doubt relieved to hear this. Pollin told Glickman to get a letter of credit ready and present the whole thing to a meeting of all the league's owners scheduled for noon the next day. Glickman got on the phone to Sarkowski, who told him he'd have his banker in Tacoma get in touch the next morning. Glickman can't have felt too comfortable with this. Bankers didn't start work until 10 a.m., which would give him very little time to get the documentation he needed. So the next morning at 10 a.m. on the dot, he called the bank. He was referred to a banker named Hugh Darling at the bank's sister institution in Los Angeles. Quote, I called Darling, Glickman said. He had never heard of me, Sarkowski, the NBA, or anything. He called Tacoma, called me back, and said yes, he would handle my problem. So at a few minutes after 10 a.m., Glickman was on his way to downtown L.A. to pick up the letter. He got lost on the way. By the time Glickman got to the office, it was already 11:15, and it was another half-hour drive back to the hotel, even if he didn't get lost again. He raced into the bank and found Darling yelling into the telephone, having a heated discussion with someone. Quote, he waved me to a chair where I sat biting my nails for about 10 minutes, Glickman said. When he finished, he started asking me questions about Portland and the NBA. Without being too offensive, Glickman managed to redirect Darling's attention back to the letter, which was just on the verge of being too late. Darling dictated the letter to his secretary, who brought it over for him to sign. Alas, there was a typo on it. He told her to take it away and retype it. Quote, "I said, don't bother with that. Just initial it and give me the damn letter," Glickman said, which he did. Racing to the parking lot, Glickman leaped into his car and started running every red light he saw between downtown L.A. and the Beverly Wilshire. When he got there at 12:05 p.m., he found Pollen, the Baltimore Bullets owner, in the bathroom. Pollen, quote, "told me he had been worried about my lateness and so had asked for a recess while he went to the John," Glickman said. "He remained there until I arrived with my letter." The NBA representatives took the information and told Glickman to come back at 3 p.m. When he did, he was told that congratulations, Portland was now an NBA city. Well, that's it for our show for today. This show is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. In addition to this podcast, it includes a weekly newspaper column, a daily RSS feed to catch on your smartphone reader, a Facebook page, a Twitter feed, and a couple other minor components. Photographs and other images that go with today's show are on offbeatoregon.com, where you'll also find full citations to the sources used in writing this story, along with more than 200 other articles written over the last 5 years, all organized by date of publication. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, and was written by Carmen Ficarra. I do Offbeat Oregon for learning and for fun, so I don't sell advertising or ask for donations, but if you feel a need to make a donation anyway, may I suggest that you buy a copy of my book instead? It's called Wicked Portland, The Wild and Lusty Underworld of a Frontier Seaport Town, published by the History Press in 2012. You can order it from the store link on offbeatoregon.com if you'd like, but if you still have a local community bookstore in your town, I hope you'll consider buying it from them instead. It sells for $20. Finally, if you're ever in Corvallis, drop me a line. Maybe we can grab a cup of coffee and talk about history. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com. Don't be a stranger, especially don't be a stranger if you have a good idea for one of these columns in the future. Speaking of the future, our next show will be coming your way at around 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. And until then, go out and fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.